Lecture and support begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Nurture and Support, sharing all the awesome since 2013. This is Kelly Toole at K-E-L-L-Y-T-H-U-L on Twitter. And because you have yet to offer me a better bridge to introduce Mel, I must say, with me as always, Mel.
Hey, everybody. It's Mel at Karmic9 on Twitter, and it's great to be back for another week of sharing all the awesome recommendations that we love and hope that y'all will comment once in a while and share something with us. And please help Kelly with his introductions. That would be awesome of all of you.
Yes, please. Someone. That's a plea for help. Oh, goodness. Yeah, I don't know how to feel about my recommendation this week. I'm conflicted in many ways. So if you've ever, had a really bad day, you're just kind of down, and you're looking for something to kind of pick you up and lift your spirits, the recommendation I'm going to give today is not for you. This is not the one. This is probably one when you're in a strong emotional state and can withstand that being drawn down upon a little bit, because it's a lot to take in. It's bleak, but it's kind of interesting. So with that glowing introduction, I'll go ahead and get started. That I am recommending a movie, and shockingly enough, I'm recommending a movie that was released last year. So it's like a somewhat current recommendation.
Oh my!
Released in 2013, and it is called Escape from Tomorrow. It's available on Netflix. I'm certain it's available on Amazon Prime. I came across it because, and I think it may have made its way in past podcasts a little bit. I'm myself and my family are pretty big fans of Disney World. So the whole Disney thing, we like to make it down to the parks with some regularity. So I came across this thing where the little poster for the movie is a Mickey hand with blood dripping off of it.
And awesome.
Escape from Tomorrow written in the Disney font. And I was like, well, what's this about? So I started looking into it a little bit more. And it's fascinating. It's shot in black and white. It was actually filmed. So Disney's notorious for really trying to protect their intellectual property rights. But this is called the pinnacle of guerrilla filmmaking, because they shot almost all the footage is actually shot from the park. And they used basically higher end Canon cameras so that they looked like tourists just taking pictures and filming their family. But they were actually filming this movie in mostly Disney World. There's actually a couple little sections in Disneyland, but I am very familiar with the topography of Disney World and the different. And this is clearly Disneyland on a number of different rides, walking through the park, and really good high quality black and white footage. And they did black and white, I think, somewhat because they had to kind of sneak in little segments whenever they could to film this. And so some of the thing around the lighting and the position of the sun, that had they gone color, it would have been even harder to have a fairly seamless, as they spliced all the different scenes together. Mm-hmm. The actors would actually rehearse the scenes in hotel rooms over and over again to say, okay, so when we get in the park, this is what we're going to do. They passed the scripts around on their iPhones so that they could kind of read these things. And they would ride, like, there's a segment on the Small World ride, and they must have wrote it like 20 times in a row to get all the different things that they needed to get for that scene. Wow. So just the concept of how they made this. And then the big thing was Disney going to sue them? Or tell them to say, hey, you can't do that, because they're pretty aggressive about that kind of stuff. Their website, and we'll include a link to the website in the podcast, the blog post for the podcast, their website has a counter on it that says, it's been this many months, this many days, and this many hours since we have not been sued by Disney. So they basically started a countdown when they released the movie, waiting for the lawsuit. But basically, Disney, I believe, has kind of taken the position It gets into some very interesting things about fair use and what could be considered, because Disney lets people post their vacation stuff up all the time.
Right.
They film things there. So they're trying to say, well, maybe if we just kind of ignore it, then it's not going to get a lot of publicity and it'll go away. It does. Disney keeps kind of a big online reference of every movie that features Disney World or Disneyland, and they have included this film. So they're at least acknowledging it's out there. So the concept of how it was filmed was fascinating. The writer and director, Randy Moore, his parents were divorced and his father moved down to Orlando, and he would go visit his father on some regular basis, and they would go to Disney World a lot. And the interview I read, kind of, he said, and as you can tell by the movie, I have a lot of father issues to work out with, set in the context of this. So there was something kind of going on with him, and so what he's really created here is it's a dark comedy horror movie set in Disney World. Some super creepy images from time to time. And there's some very interesting twists and turns. I don't want to really go into much detail because it really, it spoiled the experience, I think, if you don't kind of let it kind of play out. But the tagline of the movie is "Bad things happen everywhere." And that indeed is the case here. So for the first two thirds of the movie, I can at least kind of set up initially that the movie starts out, they're in the Contemporary Hotel in Disney World, and the guy's on the balcony of the Contemporary Hotel talking on his cell phone, and he's getting fired from his job by his boss. They're on the last day of their family vacation, and the boss is like, "Eh, sorry, you're fired, but hey, be sure to ride Soaring, it's awesome." And so that's where it starts off. And it's a husband, wife, and two young children. And the kids are kind of, the little boy locks the dad out on the porch or on the patio there. And so the kids are a little bit of a handful. They're younger kids that age, not too shocking in terms of that. There's not a lot of affection between the husband and wife. They're kind of bickering all the time. And then these two young French girls are heading into the park and pass them very early in this very first scene. And he kind of becomes very interested in them and kind of following them around the park a little bit. And so for the first two thirds, it's this whole process of you don't really like you feel sorry for the guy who lost his job, but pretty rapidly he makes himself a pretty unlikable character. Mm-hmm. In terms of, so are you paying attention to your kids? And so he's, the kid puts them on rides that the girls are going on so they can keep following them and all these types of things. And so it's just kind of bleak and dark and unpleasant. And then all of a sudden, about two thirds of the way in, it stays bleak and dark, but it just does this turn that just knocked me off my feet in terms of, it's like, what? and then it kind of continues on and goes on. But so it's not an uplifting movie. I found it fascinating. I think it was very interesting filmmaking. The guerrilla tactics used to film all the stuff in Disney World, very cool. Mm-hmm. Slightly undermined by the fact that on a few things, they had to do kind of a green screen where they'd be two people sitting on a bench and then they'd be putting back behind some other footage. And it's pretty evident when they drop into a couple of the green screen segments when the two people are sitting on a bench, and compared to the rest of the, most of the stuff they shot in the park is very, very good quality. So a little bit of clunkiness on some of the green screen stuff. I thought all the actors were really, really solid. The storyline was fascinating. So it's an interesting thing. It's definitely one that kind of wherever you're at kind of emotionally, if you're kind of saying, I need up and not down, this is probably not the movie for you at that time. But when you're feeling like, yeah, I can weather something a little bit right now, it's worth it. Cause it is, I found it to be really fascinating. It's about an hour and a half, or it's 90 minutes long. So it's not a huge investment. The first two thirds, because it kind of reinforces a little bit of, this isn't necessarily such a great guy, starts to get a little bit slow, but then all of a sudden they hit the turn, wow, pretty fun from there. Some pretty amazing things. And for a low budget movie, there are a couple of just remarkable special effects. I will mention these remarkable special effects do involve the large Epcot ball. the two most amazing special effects in the movie, that's related in some way. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to go any further than that. But it's a very fascinating movie. I think if I really wasn't aware of it until I kind of just stumbled across the poster, caught my eye, and I enjoyed it. I said I didn't have a bounce in my step afterwards. It was a little bit of, okay, time to move on. But I recommend Escape from Tomorrow when you're in a good mood and can handle it. So there you go.
So this is horror, not supernatural horror. Mickey's not going to come to life and start, you know, this isn't the ghost of Mickey come back to revenge Walt, avenge Walt, is it?
Not
Just straight up.
super.
Okay.
I mean, I mean, there's an evil lurking in this park, and it starts to
Okay.
emerge. And so I'm not a big fan of It's a Small World as a ride to begin with, to tell you, but their version of it, what happens in it is, there's some supernaturally evil-y things kind of going on
Okay.
there. Really well done. And then they're really crafty because they couldn't use any of the actual park music. So there's very clear music going on in It's a Small World. That's not what you hear when they're in the ride. And usually it's pretty far apart. But actually the soaring ride, it was I thought it was the actual music for a little while. So, but yeah, so it's not, it's there's no ghost of Mickey. You get a little bit of backstory on the corporate sponsors of Disney, so of some of the Disney rides, which is interesting. But yeah, the small world, and that's probably early in the film, is that you'll see the evil start to make its way out in It's a Small World. So.
Okay. I like the idea here of bad things at Disneyland.
Yeah, well, it was, yeah, and it was, and I read some of the reviews and stuff, and it was like, well, the Disney haters must really love this movie, and I'm about as far from that as you can get. I still found it fascinating. I mean, it was definitely, they were showing Disney World in a light that is not consistent with their brand in terms of some things there. But I just thought it was interesting movie making. So I don't, I'm not about Disney bashing. I enjoy it a lot, but it's, and this is not, this would not be kind of on their reel of, hey, this is what
Right.
Disney World's all about. But it's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, I'm not a Disney hater. I just I've actually never been. So, but the whole idea of bad things happening in places that are supposed to be all happy is a good one. It's one I like in movies and books and everything else because I like to read about things that are more horrible than my real life. So,
Well,
I
this I
have a
think will
feeling this one will do
this will
it.
achieve that. I believe this will achieve that. I do ask that you keep in mind that this is a since you've not been, it is different than as depicted. what they show you, so, like, why would Kelly want to go there? There's the Small World ride, as much as I dislike it, is not the version. I mean, it is the actual Small World ride, but then they start doing some pretty cool effects. So, which actually may improve that ride. I don't know, but yeah, it's worth a look. It's pretty fun.
Cool. I'll check it out. I think I heard something about that last year about I remember something about some movie that everybody thought Disney was going to sue them over. So that was probably what they were talking about. But yeah, I had no idea what it was called. And it's on Netflix, which most of you out there should already have. So surprisingly enough, I also have a movie. And I have a movie that's available on Netflix and it's not available on Amazon Prime. Well, it is, but you'd have to pay for it. It's also a relatively old movie. And I would hope that all of you out there have seen this movie, but it may have slipped past a few of you. And let me give you a little backstory of what reminded me of this movie because I haven't watched it in years and years. But recently, the Sci-Fi Channel started a new show called Dominion, which is based off the movie Legion, which is basically about some angels that have gone bad and want to destroy humanity. So this led me along the first instance of bad angels that I ever remember coming across, and it is the most wonderful movie from 1995 called The Prophecy with dun da 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 Christopher Walken. You've seen this,
Oh,
haven't you,
nice.
Kelly?
I have not. I
You
have
have
not
not
seen
seen
this
The
movie.
Prophecy. Oh
I
my
have not
gosh.
seen the prophet. This is
Well.
like I recently I was outed that I hadn't ever seen Big Trouble in Little China. I corrected that, but I've not seen this one either.
Oh, okay. Well, the prophecy, like a lot of these angels, bad angel movies, is Christopher Walken plays the Archangel Gabriel, and he has started a second war in heaven, you know, long, long, long time ago, that's been raging all of these years. And he essentially hates humans, who he likes to call talking monkeys, which actually all of the angels, even kind of the good ones, call us talking monkeys. So they don't really like us very much. But some angels come down to earth to get the soul of a horrible, horrible, horrible person who has just died. And Gabriel believes that if he can get this soul and he can get it to fight on his side, that he will win the war in heaven and basically reopen heaven, because heaven has been closed since this war began. And essentially all of the souls on earth, nobody's going to heaven. Their souls are just sitting there, but you can still go to hell, because hell is always open, as you'll find later in the movie, they tell you.
Walmart. This,
yes, it's always open 24/7. This movie had a bunch of people in it at the time. It was Christopher Walken. I'm probably saying his name wrong, but Elias Koteas. You'll recognize him when you see him. He plays a cop in a whole lot of movies. But this is from 1995, which is getting to be a really long time ago, even though I'm still kind of thinking, hey, the 90s, that was just like 10 years ago or so. It wasn't. This movie's almost 20 years old. Eric Stoltz. Probably anybody younger than me doesn't really know who Eric Stoltz is, the redheaded actor who's mainly into directing nowadays. He plays a good angel named Simon. You've got Virginia Madsen in it. Adam Goldberg, who is a great comedic actor who always plays like this neurotic Jewish character. He is also in it as basically some comedic relief. And way before anybody knew who he was, Viggo Mortensen. And Viggo plays Lucifer, who you don't see till the very end of the movie. But when I was looking at it, and it, of course, since everybody knows who he is from Lord of the Rings now, he now has high billing on the movie previews on Netflix. Now they're like, Viggo Mortensen's in this movie. And so some of you may have gone back and seen this, if you were, especially the ladies, they were Viggo Mortensen fans, may have gone back and watched The Prophecy, but they were probably disappointed because he's only in it at the very end. But essentially, Simon, the Eric Stoltz angel, hides the soul, and Gabriel is tearing through this small town in Arizona looking for it. He hides this horrible, horrible, evil colonel's soul and this little girl. And Christopher Walken is amazing, and he always plays these amazing, crazy, evil characters so well. And this was way back. It was after Pulp Fiction. This movie did come out after Pulp Fiction. So he was getting known and all back then. But this is 20 years ago, so he was much younger. But it's just a great movie about bad angels coming to Earth, and Christopher Walken steals the show with his trademark horror comedy that no one else can quite pull off like him. He is hilarious in this movie, though, in a creepy, scary way. You don't ever want to meet Christopher Walken in a dark place, ever. One of the things I really liked about this was the way that they depicted the angels as being quite raptor-like. They would perch on, like, the edges of things and squat there like a bird, and they sniffed, and like they could smell where people were, and he could smell people that were going to die, which is who Adam Goldberg played. He's basically the Angel Gabriel's zombie sidekick, and because Christopher Walken is awesome, but he can't drive, so he has to have somebody to drive him around, and so he has a habit of going and trapping people who have just died, and he keeps them around as his little lackeys as they slowly decompose because they're dead. And Adam Goldberg plays a great little zombie who does not respect Gabriel in the slightest. He's just doing what he says because eventually Gabriel tells him he's going to let him die for real. But, you know, that never really happens. So at the very end, you get to meet Viggo Mortensen, who plays a very interesting Lucifer, and of course has a deal to make with everyone trying to save this soul from Gabriel so he won't win the war in heaven, because of course Lucifer's gig in it is that he already has a hell. And if Gabriel wins this war and reopens heaven, he'll just make it another hell. And there's not enough room for two hells. Two hells is one hell too many, as he says. So it's just great. I love it. It's dark and funny and has bad angels in it, which is something I always like. But the genius here, and I have to admit that I did not even know that there were 5 movies in the Prophecy series. Christopher Walken is in the first one, the second one, and the third one, but they have 2 more that I had never even heard of, and they're all available on Netflix. So everybody needs to run out and watch The Prophecy, and if you think that's pretty good, then you can go on and watch the rest of them. I recall I need to watch it again, but I think Prophecy 2 was pretty good, and I think after that they, of course, you know, probably I think number 3 was not very good, and I haven't seen the 4th or the 5th one. But Prophecy 1 and Prophecy 2 are well worth a watch. And Christopher Walken, everybody needs to see this. And I can't believe you haven't seen it, Kelly.
I will correct that. Yeah. So it sounds like our recommendations could work well together today, because they could watch yours and kind of leave feeling a little bit, you know, up. And then they could watch mine. So they'll net out even. I think our listeners will come, you know, whatever emotional state they enter, they'll leave. And it'll just be a little bit of a journey up and down. But they're both, yeah, sounds like both the kind of dark movies. But, and there's humor. There's humor in mine. Not Christopher Walken bad guy humor, but it's still pretty good. But, yeah, he's an amazing guy. It's just, and it's interesting sometimes the choices he makes. So, like, I could never wrap my head around why he did Balls of Fury, the ping pong martial arts movie. But him being in it made me watch it, and I enjoyed him in it. I enjoy him in anything he does. He's really amazing.
Yeah, he always plays this wonderful, awesome character, and I don't know if that says something about me bad, that I always enjoy his evil, snarky, stab you kind of characters. He's just so quirky and awesome, and you really need to watch The Prophecy. Even though it's old, it's not the best looking movie on Netflix, because they have not bothered to even try to remaster The Prophecy, I don't think. I did see that some Blu-rays were out there, but when I read the reviews of it, they're like, it hasn't been remastered. They've just stuck it on a Blu-ray disc. So it doesn't look, it's not the best looking HD movie out there. It's not in HD. It was filmed in 1995, folks. So don't expect it to look like even The Matrix, which is old now. But
yeah,
it's good. It's good. It's good enough that you can get the gist of it. And it's really funny for me to go back and watch, especially some of these older ones, and see the clothes that they're wearing. It's just their pants are so high-waisted back in this movie that it was painful to watch. You're like going, ah, that looks painful. But anyway, Bad Angels, Christopher Walken, you'll enjoy it, definitely. So go check it out on Netflix. And if any of you have seen the 4th and 5th movies in that series, let me know what you thought of them, because I haven't seen them at all. So need to see if I need to spend time to rectify that.
Cool. All righty. Well, I think we can move on to our social media recommendations then for the week.
I think we can.
My recommendation this week is Kurt Vandenbroek, and that's at Kurt, KURTVAN, Kurt Van, at Kurt Van on Twitter. Kurt and I have been following each other on Twitter a fairly long time. We don't work for the same company, but we met through our work. And he's a funny guy. So I know I've established sports and Mel are not a great combination, but Kurt is a Green Bay Packer fan, and I am a Chicago Bear fan. And these would be the Hatfields and the McCoys, the Montagues and the Capulets, or whatever.
Okay. Those references I understand.
Yeah, the Montagues and the Packer fans are like the Capulets without teeth. is kind of my view. You know, they're just, they eat a lot of cheese and they're stupid. And then the Bear fans are just, you know, really smart. So we've always had that kind of fun back and forth on Bears Packers stuff. He's just a funny guy. And the reason I wanted to kind of recommend him is that we have followed each other fairly long time. And there's a lot of these services and capabilities now that are kind of going back into your timeline and saying, hey, this is a throwback to 2 years ago or 3 years ago. This was a tweet. And Kurt unearthed, and I believe it was yesterday, he goes, oh, I remember this. And his timeline had blown up about 3 years ago on that day when a certain individual, that would be me, was notified by Sci-Fi that I had won the actual prop Piranaconda egg from Piranaconda.
So, I remember the burning jealousy I felt that day.
It was a special day. It was just like, and so I was very excited. And so Kurt had recycled that tweet around that. And he was just saying, so how do you celebrate this anniversary? I hope it's not with an omelet or something like that. And I just replied back that no, I do ask everybody pause and reflect on the fact that I got the Piranaconda egg. I just think that's the main thing we need to focus on is who owns the Piranaconda egg. And so
he brought that up. The last Piranaconda egg.
What's that?
The last Piranaconda egg.
Yes, the only. There were only two prop eggs, and as Terry Ivins has shared, the actress and the lead actress in that movie, one of those is the bottom of in some body of water in Hawaii. It sank, and so I have the last prop egg. So Kurt brought that up. One of my favorite things because of the whole Bear Packer stuff, fortunately, I think Kurt's wife, who obviously is a saint to begin with because she's married to him, but she must have introduced good influence and good genes into their family because Kurt's incredibly precious young daughter is a Bears fan. And a few years back, the Bears played the Packers for the game to determine who would go to the Super Bowl. And so it's about as good as you can get. Big rivals playing each other to who's going to go to the big game. And the Packers won that game. And his daughter was inconsolable. She was crying. She was going around. And he, of course, was very happy. And so he's filming her. And he's like, oh, they lost. They're never going to win. And he's like, oh, what's the matter, Lauren? And he's like, go, Pack, go. And he's filming her. And she's like, I don't like the Packers. And he goes, oh, don't worry. Maybe the Bears will win next year. No, they won't. Oh, yeah, you're probably right. You know, it was just a cute. He wasn't tormenting her, but it was a very cute exchange, and that video actually went a little bit viral during that time, and it was on some local Chicago stations. So awesome. I'll do a little bit of digging because I would love for the blog post for us to have the little Lauren clip of her reaction to the Bear Packer because it was so cute and his just total inappropriate father-like support. pretty hilarious. Yeah. So I'm going to give Kurt the recommendation, my social recommendation, and I'll find that little Lauren video because I think it's worth a chuckle.
Well, my social media recommendation is not as cute as that, but it's highly important. And given that we're going into summer and people flock to the coast to jump into the Gulf of Mexico, this is something that you should know about. I am recommending Catherine the Shark. And her Twitter handle is @shark_Catherine. Catherine is a very large great white shark who has been tagged and has been hanging out in the Gulf of Mexico for a while. She has a Twitter account now, and she likes to tweet out when she's going to be on TV. But you can track her through the, it's OCEARCH.org. You can go there and you can track all sorts of sharks. But anyway, she's a misunderstood girl just trying to get some fish. She's hanging out in the Gulf of Mexico right now, and y'all can follow her. She's trying to raise awareness for sharks. And Shark Week comes up every summer, as we all love. So she'll be very active during Shark Week, I'm sure. So I suggest y'all all go learn more about Catherine the Shark by following her on Twitter. She also has a blog and a G+ account now, I saw. But you can get links to all of that from her Twitter account. She's quite humorous, making fun of some of the newscasters who are talking about her. So she's fun. Go follow her. Find out where she's hanging out today.
Sounds good. That's cool. So that's another one I never had heard of, Catherine the Shark. So that's very cool.
It's a relatively new account. I think started up in the last couple of weeks. So I've been following it for a week or so.
Excellent.
But she was on CNN. They talked about her on CNN recently, and the Today Show and all of that, because apparently she's been on the news quite a bit down in Florida, because she's in the Gulf. But don't be afraid of great white sharks unless they're right next to you in the water. This is why I don't go get in the water.
I think that's a
I
pretty
like all
good.
the sharks in the water and me on the land.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. So cool. All right. Well, any re-recommendations, unrecommendations, other little things to slide in from for you, Mel?
No, I think I'm good this week. I haven't been hating on anything in particular that I can remember. So I am not taking back any of my recommendations today. We'll see about next week, though.
It's a new day, but I think Catherine the Shark is safe. I think
Yes.
she'll stay strongly recommended. Excellent. Well, hey, we appreciate you all joining us. We'll hand it over to the capable vocal cords of Matt to give you all the info on how to follow and connect with us, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
You can contact us on our website, nurtureandsupport.net, or email us at nurtandsup@gmail.com. That's NURTANDSUPP at gmail.com. Or tweet us at Nert and Sup on Twitter.
Nurturing and supporting. Turn it.